Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, it is Sunday night, and that familiar slap of the bass means it's time for the weekend wrap, surveying the squared circle. Hey, a lot of action this weekend. Saw some more fights on PBC. A lot more fights coming up next week. Got some very anticipated fights coming up. Deontay Wilder will be back in the ring. Going to talk a little bit about some of the fights that took place this weekend. Right now, let's introduce our co-host, Mr. Jabron Clemon. Jabron, how are we doing this evening, my man?
Doing great today, JK. How about you?
Doing fine. The weather out here in Cali is pretty nice. Not too hot, not too cold. So, we got some good fights coming up out here in Cali. Much anticipated fight in our area, of course, July 30th. Antonio Roscoe back out in the ring out here in Fantasy Springs, what we consider our backyard somewhat. But we're looking forward to that, of course. And also we have Iceman Don Scully in the queue. Scully, how are we doing tonight, my man? I think we are. Scully, you there?
I think I heard him for a split second. Hello?
Yeah, I did. Hello,
wait,
Scully?
Who is this? Yeah. Okay,
yeah,
okay,
all right. All right, hey, what's going on, my man? How you doing?
Everything's good. How you guys doing?
Oh, doing fine. Scully, I saw just before we came on the air, you were announcing your amateur reunion up there at Mohegan Casino, I believe, and you were announcing some of the guys that were coming on. You want to talk a little bit about that with our audience?
Right. Well, you know, this is the fourth one that I've done. I've always, ever since I was an amateur, you know, going to the Nationals and the Olympic Trials, and, you know, I was one of the guys that used to keep in touch with a lot of other people. And so years later, I would talk to these guys. I'd say, oh, Roy Jones said hello. And they'd be like, oh, man, I haven't seen Roy in 20 years. So I started trying to get guys together and linking them up with, you know, guys they fought years earlier. And so then I started thinking, you know, it'd be an unbelievable idea to get them all together in the same place. So long story short, I've done three of them already. My fourth one is coming up July 23rd at the Mohegan Sun Casino. And I just got confirmation today that Iran the Blade Barkley will be there. He was, you know, a lot of people don't realize that Iran, you know, he's obviously a top pro. He knocked out Tommy Hearns, but Iran was also a very good amateur. He was on the 1982 United States team that went to the World Championships. So Iran will be there. Junior Jones will be there. Ray Oliveira, Peter Manfredo. I'm hoping Vinny Pazienza shows up. Marlon Starling, Lawrence Claybay, Jason Estrada, Junior Jones, quite an impressive list.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, like you said, this is your fourth one, so you know, we're familiar on the Pugilist Corner about all of these. I'm not sure of, you know, exactly how everyone on the Weekend Wrap was aware of it, but also we do have the champion, Mr. Layman Brewster. Layman, how are you doing tonight, my man?
Hey, man, what's going on? How y'all doing?
What's up, Layman? Hey, let me just say one thing real quick. Layman was actually at the the first one I did. He was there, the one I did in Las Vegas. So he's very familiar with it.
Yeah, it was a beautiful thing, man, just having all those guys in the same room, you know, guys that you fought amateurs with and, like, you didn't know, like, what happened to them. You know, that was a beautiful – that was a – you know what, man? It was amazing just to – like, all the memories I had of – I remember watching certain people spar or watching them fight and just being in the same room with them. You know, it was amazing because I'm – you know, first, above all, I am a fan of boxing.
Right.
Yeah,
me
too.
I was just going to ask
you two guys that had Layman ever you know been a part of that, but you know, but yeah, Layman, I would imagine, you know, like I said, I mean, you know, you guys kind of share that bond and go back, you know, from being in the ring a little bit different from Jabron and myself. So it's always glad to, you know, to kind of hear you guys, but. John, you know, I mean, after 4 years, well, I mean, I know, you know, this, you know, the first one, like you said, was in Las Vegas, but tell us about how much this event has grown in the last 4 years, because I think the first one, like, it was a very, you know, just a select few, you know, but it seems to me, you've gotten quite a few more guys involved in the last few years.
Right. I mean, it's getting, you know, the word of mouth is getting bigger, and I knew that if we took pictures and especially video of the events, that people would see them and want to attend. And this one, I mean, I don't know. I already have just on my own personal list, I have almost 100 people. And I know that there's going to be a lot more that just come that by word of mouth and they tag along with some of the other guys that are coming. So it's definitely grown, and I think the more I get it out there and the more I show the pictures and tell the stories, the more that people other people really want to be there. So I mean, I'm hoping that this could turn into something, you know, humongous, like an annual event, and maybe at a specific spot, maybe New York City, maybe Las Vegas. So I'm definitely working towards that.
Yeah, John, I mean, you know, a lot of people are aware of, you know, the Hall of Fame, you know, boxing. I mean, it's a big deal within the world of boxing, but with the growth of, like I said, you know, we remember when you did the first one in Las Vegas. I believe that kind of coincided with the rival boxing store opening, and you know, but you know, the thing that's kind of remarkable to me, John, is how you've managed to progress so far. And you know, this is all. There's no funding. I mean, this is all, you know, the fighters pay their own expense. There's no big organization backing or anything. This is just something that
right.
that you guys,
you know, what, this
you,
is,
know you guys
this
are dedicated
me.
To the game too.
Right. This is me on text messaging, basically Facebook and text messaging, spreading the word. And I'll tell you, I have to give credit. I also kind of got the idea. Emmanuel Stewart. I have to say, Emmanuel Stewart. When we were getting ready with Chad Dawson to fight Hopkins, him and I talked, and I think I haven't seen the fight. I've never watched the Hopkins-Dawson fight, but I've heard that he mentioned it on the air, how John Scully has really been able to keep in touch with a lot of guys, because I kept in touch with a lot of Kronk fighters from the 80s. Like, he was amazed. He would tell me, like, oh, I just talked to Cotty the other day, and I just talked to Willie Smith the other day. They all said they talked to you. So he really, Emmanuel really liked the fact that I kept in touch with all these guys. He kind of thought it was funny. He thought it was really great. And I kind of got the idea from that, from him telling me that, how many people mentioned it to him. I just thought, wow, you know, this is crazy. You know, I have a real connection here with some of these guys, and they have connections with other guys, and the networking could be off the charts. And that was actually before I really got deep into Facebook. But Facebook has helped me a great deal. So, like I say, I mean, I'm really excited about this one. I really think this one is going to be amazing.
Layman, you mentioned you were at the very first one out there in Vegas. What were some of your fondest memories that you take away from that gathering?
Well, just to be in that room, man, seeing people like Montel Griffin, because a lot of people don't know, me and Montel, we got such a history because we both are from the Midwest. He's from Chicago. I'm from Indianapolis. We got a lot of things in common. My birthday is June 5th. His birthday is June 6th. We both left-handed. You know, I mean, it is funny because, like, where he grew up on the south side of Chicago, the same gang that he grew up with was a gang here that the neighborhood I lived in was against. So it was like a violation to have me and him even in the same room because we didn't even wear the same color, you know, because you just what do you call that when you're a guilty by association. And so the fact that he wore red and I wore blue, he wore his hat to the left, I wore mine to the right. Now, we became roommates and lived together. He went to the 1982 Olympics, and there was a guy by the name of Mitch Stein, who was an attorney, who fought to get him a rematch with Jeremy Williams, since he had already beat Jeremy Williams once in the Nationals, I believe it was, sometime in the trials, and then they were supposed to go to the, what was that, the box office, and then he beat Jeremy again, but they had chose somebody else over him that he already beat. So anyway, this attorney fought for him to get that rematch with Jeremy Williams, and he beat him, and he went to the Olympics, but we lived together, and, you know, it was just surreal for me because when I came from Indiana, I was a good fighter. I had won everything around the Midwest. But when I started boxing with Montel, he was just so much better that he brought the best out of me, which made me become a world champion. I give so much credit to him because he was so good. He was so elusive that he made me more than just a big heavyweight that wanted to go out there and throw punches. He actually helped me to understand the importance of using your jab, the importance of using feints and using footwork and everything, man. So he set the bar for me and for us to live together, man, and then for him to go ahead and be the first man to beat Roy Jones, no matter how you look at it, technically he was up on the scorecard, and yeah, Roy was coming on, but he won that fight, you know, that's what it was. A lot of people argue that, but it is what it is. And he beat James Toney two times. Now, this is the only man to beat two. I mean, these guys, like the best of all time, so to speak, he beat them in their prime, man. And, you know, I'm just so proud when I saw him because it was really a reflection on all the times we came up when we was with Jesse Reed and, you know, coming to Vegas and coming to fight in the Golden Gloves. And then, you know, Scully representing the East Coast, the Dirty, in the Dirty South. So, you know, Clay Baby. I mean, dude, it was just, I think who was that with you? Milt McCoy? No, not, who was it, Milt? Who was that? And the Kelsey Banks. I'm riding in the car with Kelsey Banks. And I'm like, hold on, man. I've only heard of this guy. And here I am taking the pictures with this guy. So I became such a fan. I mean, I was such a fan that day. I was so honored. I was so humble, man. You know, Skipper Kemp. You just see all the guys that you saw in the amateurs. You wonder, man, whatever happened to those guys. And just to be in that room, man, like I was like a kid in a candy store, really.
Hey, and let me interject. I tell you a funny thing. You know, now you got Lamont here. He's former heavyweight champion of the world, and he knocked out Klitschko. And here I come. You know, I'm talking to him on the phone, and I'm saying, all right, I'll pick you up on the strip in front of the Bellagio. And so I'm driving down, and I had just picked up Kelsey Banks, who is one of the greatest amateurs of all time. And so then I pull over, and I pick up Lamont. Lamont jumps in, and there he is. Kelsey Banks is in the car with me. You know, and I could see that Lamont was at least impressed. He was very, you know, he respected it more than some people might. You know, he understood who was there in the car on an amateur boxing level. And the other great thing that, I don't think I mentioned this just because of the sensitivity of it. I don't think I actually mentioned this at the reunion. I don't even know if you know this, Lamont, exactly, but I had at that reunion, I also had a special two guys, and I brought them both there on purpose, which was Alex Ramos and Mike McCallum. They were both there, and I had them take pictures together. And I tell you that the story, I don't know if you guys ever heard the story behind this, but crazy thing, man. It almost brings chills up to me when I think about it. Alex Ramos beat Mike McCallum in the semifinals of the 1980 New York City Golden Gloves. Now, in New York, the New York fighters, they consider the New York Golden Gloves as important as the Olympics. Like, I've heard of guys canceling trips to other tournaments because they had to compete in the New York City Golden Gloves. Now, Alex beat Mike McCallum in the finals, in the semifinals of that tournament. Because he won that fight and he wanted to stay in New York to fight for his fourth title, his fourth consecutive New York title, he bypassed an international trip that he was set to go on. He doesn't go. He stays home to fight in New York City. The plane crashed, 1980. That was the crash over Poland that killed the entire United States team. Alex Ramos would have been on that plane had he not beaten Mike McCallum. So that was a special moment for me. I brought them together at that first reunion. I don't know if you knew that story, Lehman, but that's a true story.
Say that. It's funny you say that because when you talk about that plane crash, my trainer, who was my first trainer, named Honey Boy Bill Brown, he was a bare knuckle brawler, had 350 bare knuckle fights, man, back during the Depression. He's actually hobo with Jack Dempsey. He was out of Louisville, Kentucky. He was supposed to go on that plane with Sarge Johnson. If I'm saying that right, but yeah, Sarge Johnson had the team. He was ahead. He was a coach, and he said he turned it down for whatever reason. And so, you know, I was able to again achieve my goal of being a world champion. And again, the whole Sarge Johnson, because Mike, another trainer by the name of Bob Chambers, out of Riverside, here in Indianapolis, Indiana. He was my first trainer, but he named his gym in honor of Sarge Johnson. So, you know, it was wild, man. That's a great story, man. Thank you for sharing that with me.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So that was the kind of thing that we have going on at this reunion. And Clay Bay actually is going to meet up with a guy that he lost to as a little kid back in 1977. And that kid is going to be at the reunion July 23rd. So him and Clay Bay can meet up.
Wow.
Yeah. So you asked. Yeah. That's what I'm doing.
No, I mean, you know, like you said, it seems to be a very wonderful thing. I mean, you know, when you ask all the guys that we've had on the show that have been there, I mean, there's nothing but positive feedback. And, I mean, it seems to be, you know, something that I know kind of started out as your pet project. Now it seems like it has grown in leaps and bounds. So we always want to congratulate you on that. But, John, you said, what was the date of that? And is there a fight card going along with that?
Well, let me tell you another thing. It's July 23rd, and it's at 12 o'clock noon at the Mohegan Sun Casino. That night is a professional fight card. Delvin Rodriguez is the main event. The promoter of that show is Joe DeGuardia. And the funny thing is Joe's going to be at the reunion because, and a lot of people don't know this, Joe actually won the New York City Golden Gloves in 1988. And in the finals, he beat Larry Barnes, who ended up fighting Felix Trinidad for the world title years later. So Joe will be at the reunion during the day as a former boxer, and then he'll be the promoter of that fight that night.
Okay, yeah. I mean, yeah, I know usually there's a great fight card, you know, or something built around it. Like I said, I remember that first one had to do with something to do with the opening of the Rivals store, but that was also a big weekend in boxing. And I know, you know, you always try to you know, have impeccable timing as far as coordinating the event with, you know, a great boxing show.
Right. But, let me just say, just to tell Layman, I don't think I told him. Actually, I'm trying to do my next one the day of the Kovalev-Andre Ward fight in Las Vegas at the same place, at the Rival store. So, Layman, I hope you can plan to get out there for that fight. I know a lot of people want to be there for the fight anyway, so I think the timing will be very good.
Yes, sir. I agree, and I'm going to try to make that, man.
All right. Sounds good. I'll keep in touch on it.
Well, gentlemen, first of all, Jabron, I know, you've been kind of back there soaking up a little history and whatnot. 1988, I would imagine, you might have still been in Huggies or something. What's it like, man, being on the, sharing history, with the heavyweight champion and Mr. John Scully? I mean, what is there better to do on a Sunday afternoon?
It's a humbling feeling. I can kind of relate to it, not on that level far as professional, but, I was pretty active when I was in school for our sports. I ran track, I played football, and I was in the band. So it's like last year was a 15th year anniversary, and I got to see a lot of people I haven't seen in 10 years, and I can really relate to that. You don't know what people are doing, and you see them, and it's like, wow, some live in other countries and different parts of their life. So, I can really relate to that. But for Layman, I think that was a great experience for him to see a lot of people that he came up, the ranks with, and maybe some might have not been as successful as him, but for everybody to still be, in their right state of mind and still to go out their way to make that occasion, because like you said, it was no funding, nobody sponsored anything. So that just shows the love and passion for the sport. So I really appreciate that.
Yes, sir. Yeah, most definitely. Layman, I'm going to kind of start with you all tonight because I want to talk a little bit about heavyweight. We do know that Chris Ariola and Deontay will be doing their thing. But, Layman, have you heard anything? I mean, I know you're not a part of Mr. Wilder's team and a part of Mr. Ariola's team, but what are the ramifications now with this Povetkin thing? Does this make Povetkin his mandatory challenger after Chris Ariola?
I think so. Because I think there are going to be some, and don't quote me because I don't know, but I think there are going to be more litigations into this thing with him, first testing positive or whatnot for whatever that was, but I don't really know everything, all the details of that, man. I just believe that this is a good fight for both Deontay Wilder and Chris Ariola, man, because Deontay, don't really want to he don't want to sit down. And he doesn't need to get any rush. He needs to keep his blade sharp. He's really starting to peak in his last two performances. He's looked really good. And sometimes time can hurt you more than anything. So I'm glad he's choosing to stay busy. With him fighting Chris Ariola, it's a win-win situation because I believe he's going to get some experience from Ariola, and he's going to get a tough fight. Ariola ain't no joke, and everybody knows when you get ready for a fight, a title fight, you get in better shape, you're more focused, and you really bring it all out versus just any old fight. So Ariola, I think he knows that he has this
this window to try to be successful, because he, you know, he's fought against Vitaly, fought Bahrain. So, you know, it's like, I believe, if I'm saying this correct, this is his third world title shot. And, you know, if he could put on a good show, he might could possibly win with the experience that he has. But if that's if his defense holds up, because I think that in his past few fights, his defense haven't been so great. And fighting a guy like Deontay Wilder that just brings so much reach and so much power and so much skill now at this point. And he's bringing now even more of his professionalism into the ring. And I say that, why? Because you don't see Deontay clowning like he used to. So that tells me he's maturing into being the a mature buck, so to speak, you know, with full antlers. You know, he's not kicking. He's conserving his energy. His focus is on the fight. It's not on the people. And whatever, you know, a fighter does after a fight, that's on him. But going into the fight, I don't see as much horseplay in the ring and taking chances that he don't have to take. So I think that he's coming along well, and I think it builds up for a future fight, mega fight, between Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder. But that's if he can get past Chris Sierra, because Chris is still young enough where he can dig into that bag. You know, one of the things that I know why I say I'm not counting him out, why? Because he has my trainer, my strength trainer, by the name of Briny Hudson. They call him BB. And when I beat when I beat Galata, when I broke the world record and beat Galata, when I beat Kali Mihan, BB was there and he trained me, man. And I was in tremendous, tremendous shape. And I just, you know, with him having BB on the side, that lets me know that he's serious, lets me know that he's going to come and show up and show out. And I think the people are going to be in for a real good fight, man. And I think that it's going to definitely be an exciting fight to watch.
Now, Layman, you know, one of the things that I kind of pride myself on is that, you know, this show, we're straight up, and we ask straight up questions. Now, Deontay is my man. I've been with Deontay since he was with Emmanuel Stewart. So we kind of have a history. But when you speak of his skill set, and this is one of the things that I really think that is to his detriment. You speak of his maturity, but when I look at Anthony Joshua, Layman, I compare the two skill sets. I mean, Deontay brings that puncher's power into the ring. You know, he also brings you know, the height and the power. But when I look at the two skill sets, baby, that is where I'm very apprehensive. I think that Deontay needs fights that enhance his skill set rather than demonstrate his power, such as this fight against a come-ahead fighter like Chris Arreola. Maybe your thoughts on that.
Well, don't get me wrong, man. Arreola can box, too. But, you know, he has the Mexican mentality, as I like to call it, where he's not afraid to bang. He's not afraid to, you know, let his balls hang, so to speak, as they would say, man. He's a warrior. He doesn't back down. And he'll bring out the best in you. He goes to the body and he goes upstairs and he comes forward. And for a guy like, you know, Deontay Wilder, that could potentially give him trouble if he's determined to get to him, you know, because you can only throw with so many long-range missiles before you got to get close, which is where, in my opinion, a guy, you know, like Arreola would want to be. So I think it's going to be a test of wits, man, and a test of conditioning. You know, I want to say that you know, Arreola's going to come to fight because he realized he's not going to have too many chances, if any at all, after this. So I believe he's going to come with his A game, and sometimes that could be hard because when you're fighting somebody that you don't feel may threat to you, that's when you're going to have your hardest fight. And so, again, this is some great experience from a mental level, a mental point of view, in my opinion, for Deontay to go in there, because he got to be asking himself, how do I get up for this guy? Because I don't know if he feels threatened by him, because he got such a reach and he know he got so much power and he's the champ. So, you know, I don't think he has any doubts or any fear. And sometimes when you don't have any fear, have any doubt, so to speak, that could actually make you too comfortable, too relaxed going in the fight, where you get caught with something that you shouldn't get caught with. So I just hope that whatever he does, he come out there just like he did in his last two fights, came out there, he didn't play as much, and he took care of business.
Scully, from a trainer's point of view, what do you think of the matchup of skill sets between Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder?
I would say Joshua, to me, like, impresses me a little bit more with his overall skill set. I think one thing about Wilder, you know, his skills might be a bit overshadowed by his power, you know, and I think he may even neglect them a little bit because he wants to land that power, and he knows people are expecting the power, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I think he might be a little, you know, I've seen him referenced by people as, you know, like I forget what the exact terms they use, but, you know, like the image of like a guy who's just out there bombing away with like no skill. And, you know, I don't think, number one, the amateur level that he reached, you can't make that level internationally without having good boxing technique and skill. You have to have some knowledge of how to execute boxing. So I think he might be a little bit underrated there. But I think Joshua is pretty good. I think right now, and it's funny because it's not like, you know, the years passed, everyone knew the heavyweights. You know, everyone knew every heavyweight. And now it's just like, if you told someone on the street, hey, guess what, Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder are fighting. I honestly don't think that the average American would even have a clue who we're talking about. You know, as opposed to back in the day, if you said, hey, Larry Holmes is fighting Jerry Cooney, you know, everybody knew about it. Muhammad Ali's fighting Joe Frazier, everybody knew about it. But I think this is a great potential fight, but not the masses, I don't think, really know about it, you know, so I don't know. But I like the fact that I think Wilder has improved. He's got a very good he not only has Mark Breland in the corner, but he also has Russ Amber in the camp with them. And Russ is a very, you know, he's a trainer out of Montreal, very sharp boxing guy. And I know, and I talked to Russ quite a bit, and I know that they're working on his technique and his skill. So I think he's going to improve, and I think I won't be surprised, and I haven't talked to them about this, but I'm assuming that we're going to see a good jab, good technique against Areola in this fight. I think his technique will be emphasized in this particular fight.
Scully, I'm going to stick with you first while we're talking about good fights and techniques and styles making fights. We've heard a lot from Mr. Frampton concerning his bout with Luis Santa Cruz. John, do you think this is going to be an exciting fight, or do you think perhaps Frampton is overmatched here against Leo?
To be honest with you, you know, I can't say that I've seen enough of Frampton to really say. I'll say this: I know I have quite a few friends over across the pond, and they all seem to really think he's really good. I mean, you know, I don't know if that's just national loyalty blindness or they're legit, but a lot of people really seem to think he's very good. But Leo obviously is proven very good. So I don't know. With my own eyes, I really haven't seen enough of him, so I couldn't really say for sure. But on paper, I mean, it seems like it's going to be a good fight in terms of the numbers it'll do and things like that.
Layman, your thoughts on that Leo Santa Cruz Peter Frampton fight?
Excuse me. Yeah, well, I would say pretty much the same thing. I haven't seen enough from Frampton to really say what he can and cannot do. So I wouldn't do no justice putting my input in, man, because I just don't know.
Well, let's talk about some guys that, I mean, you know, everybody knows his reputation, and that's Mr. Kovalev. He's going to be in the ring against Shambhala. Layman, do you think Shambhala poses a real threat to Kovalev other than a puncher's chance?
Well, you always got a puncher's chance, man. But right now, I just think Kovalev is on top of his game. You know, he got John David Jackson in his corner, and John David Jackson is a master, man. And I have nothing but love for him. And you know, I really hope that Kovalev goes as far as he could go, man. Because I just like to see John work on, you know, honored in the things that he do, man. And I'm gonna go with Kovalev, man, because you know that power, and he could actually box, and people don't know that, man. And, you know, I think, Scully, you may have been telling me that he could actually really box, but people, you know, before he could really get to him, his power done got to him. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see.
Right. You know, I thought his jab, I thought his boxing skills and his timing against Hopkins, I thought was extremely impressive. I mean, a lot of people kind of missed it. You know, they just thought that he was overpowering Bernard. But I thought he was setting Bernard up with a lot of stuff. He was forcing Bernard into certain positions with his jab and his body. You know, I was really impressed. You know, a lot of people watch boxing and they don't necessarily see the whole picture. And I don't think Kovalev has a reputation as a smart boxing guy. You know, I've seen a couple guys call him like a robot. And, man, I don't see what they see. I think that guy, he certainly knows how to fight. He certainly knows how to set people up and push them where he wants them to go and everything like that. So, you know, all things considered, even at his truly best, I mean, Chalembe is a pretty good fighter. He's up there, but Kovalev, I think, is on a different planet right now than all of these guys. You know, and they're not going to put him in with someone that they would assume would be a real threat, because they don't want to blow that fight with Andre Ward either.
Yeah, that fight still has to be made. You know, I was just looking at an article, and I wanted to get you and Layman both your take on it, because both you gentlemen have been in the ring, I mean, it might not be exactly the same type of testing, but I want you guys to kind of share with us, because, you know, I know, you know, it's MMA, but, you know, we've had John Jones tested, you know, he's failed a positive test. His B sample has come back also with the same substance. Lucien Boutte, he's been tested positive for a substance after his fight with Badu Jack, and now they're testing his B sample. John, can you kind of explain to us, you know, what that means, A sample, B sample? And are you guys given a list of substances that are banned, or exactly how does this procedure go?
You know, when I was the times I've been around it, I mean, to be honest with you, I never, and everybody probably says this, but I can assure you, like, I don't even know what a steroid looks like. I wouldn't know how to get it. I don't know what it does. I've never looked into it. I have no clue. So I've never even paid attention to it. And to be honest with you, I've always been kind of naive. Like even with my fighters, I've never even assumed that any of my fighters would do it. As far as I know, none of them ever have. So whenever I hear, like, the commission, whenever they start talking about the steroids and the testing, whatever they test for, I just kind of blank out, because I know, I just feel like it doesn't apply to me and my guys. So, to be honest with you, I'm not the guy to ask. I have no idea what they test. I don't know what they do. I don't know anything about it. To be honest, I don't feel like it applies to me at all. So I never even learned about it, to be honest.
I kind of expected that answer from you, you know, but Layman, I mean, you know, you're kind of involved in this new generation. you know, you're giving advice and whatnot. Damon, are you giving a list of banned substances before training? You know, I mean, exactly. Can you tell us how this procedure actually works?
I think that they have many different ways that they do it. I know, like, when Floyd fought Pacquiao, he wanted to do it the Olympic style, which was like they would just come knock on your door, basically, or call you and tell you to come in, or just show up at the gym, you know, and you would do that, like, four times of their own choosing. Then, you know, you have the ones, I guess, where you would urinate before the fight. You urinate after a fight, or in one case, you just, in terms of the testing, you just after the fight, you can't leave, and you're monitored, as you know, by one of the people to make sure that you're not trying to use someone else's urine when you go use the bathroom. I can say that I've heard rumors, you know, and I definitely won't mention names or anything, but I've heard a lot of rumors about a lot of fighters that we know of that are, you know, very, very successful. And you hear rumors, and that's all it is. It ain't to say that it's true, but, I feel like I asked the question of, well, should they make two different rules where you have a category where you got people that can take these things and fight each other versus people who can't. I don't know. I mean, it's not fair when a guy would want to take something to try to win. I had a fight against some people that I know for the fact that they were on it just because my doctor is a biochemist PhD from USC. And he made this stuff, so to speak, in labs, so he knew all the signs, so he could look at a person and tell by the structure of their face, because it protrudes out your jawline in a certain way, or the pimples on your back, or even by one's natural behavior, their aggression. And, you know, these type of things are signs of steroids, you know, maybe growth hormones, so to speak. I know some of the amateurs, you know, when we used to fight against some of the known countries, you know, that have actually tested positive for steroids, which, again, I won't name. But I just want to say, you know, it's unfair, man, because I'm like this. If I give my all and you give my all, within, if you beat me fair and square, then there's nothing wrong with that. But if you're so scared of the fact that you think you're going to get beat, that you got to cheat, well, why even get into a sport like this, man? Because it's not fair. So that's my two cents on it, you know?
I'm glad, you know, to hear from both you and Scully. I mean, you know, like I said, I knew, you know, I was just more or less just trying to find out, you know, I mean, you know, actually what all this involves, because we, right, just seems like there's such a legend of fighters that seem to be, you know, guilty or, you know, at least found some type of allegations about this. Japan, do you want to comment on that before we move on?
I mean, just like Layman said, it's just unfair and it's unfortunate that, you know, you have some people who can get away with it and still move on and be successful.
Now, another thing that we've heard within the last 5 days, and, you know, you guys know how much I've gotten on talking about the different belts and whatnot, but the WBA has started setting it up where they have some of their title holders, the interim and the silver and whatnot. They're going to have them start facing each other and actually start cutting down on the number of belts. Layman, your thoughts on that? And I mean, you know, do you really think that, you know, these different sanctioning bodies are going to give up those sanctioning fees, or do you really think that, you know, like right now, this is just something that they're saying because that's what the public want to hear?
I don't know, man. It's hard to say. It's definitely something that I think should be done, because when you bought in all these titles, then you watered down the sport, man. I mean, you got a guy, because of his nationality or because of the country he lives in, being the champion of a certain belt. You know, like, okay, you're the Pan American WB whatever heavyweight champ. What does that mean? I mean, what does that mean? So now he don't really want to, he didn't really care to strive to become a world champion. Why? Because he got that title and everybody in his surroundings knows who he is. So I think that alienates the sport, man. You start to water it down because you're comfortable over here and you're a promoter, you're a manager, you're a sanctioning body holder, and this is your champion. You're comfortable, so you're not willing to let him fight this guy from here in another part of the world, because it wouldn't make sense to have a Pan American champion in China. You know, like, so to me, it's really stupid, but I understand from a financial standpoint, it makes money because the locals of that era, that area, are going to support that belt. They're going to support that champion because that's their guy, and it just makes sense. But with having so many belts, man, I mean, it just really waters down the sport of boxing when you had a day where you knew who the top fighters were in the welterweight division, middleweight division, light heavyweight division, all the divisions, because you didn't have all of these minor belts. Maybe you had a state belt, you know, maybe you had a continental belt. But now, man, you got some ridiculous belts, man. I mean, you got belts that, like, I don't even want to name because I don't want to get in any legal trouble, but the name of it sounds stupid. So it's like, what does that do for you in terms of becoming a world champion, you know? And I hate it. And I'd really like to hear what Scully thinks, because, you know, we cut from the same cloth, but, you know, he may have a different take on that.
Well, well, listen, I'm not worried about legal trouble. You know, the WBC, they have this title, right? They have the African title, and they have the Hispanic. I don't know if they call it Hispanic or they call it Spanish, but I don't know if you know this, but it makes I can't tell the story without laughing. Like, they have the WBC African title. But what that means is, if you have relatives or descendants from Africa, you can fight for it. So that means anybody, any black guy in America, you can get a guy from Chicago, fight a guy from Detroit for the WBC African title. That's a true story. They also have the Hispanic title, you know, the Latin American or whatever they call it. That means you can be Puerto Rican, you can be Mexican, you can be Colombian, whatever it is. As long as you have a name that sounds like, you know, Gonzalez, Torres, whatever, you can fight for this title. It doesn't matter if you're from Connecticut or, you know, so it's the same title. I was an intercontinental title years ago, and recently one of the kids in the gym asked me, as a lot of people have, but he asked me, oh, wow, the intercontinental title, like, what does that mean, like, the intercontinental? And I was so stuck. I had no idea. All these years, I have no idea what that means. Like, the intercontinental, I don't even think they know what it means. Like, intercontinental to me means world. You know, all the continents connected together, they make up the world, as far as I know. So, and as I think I told you one time, the whole Graziano Racciani thing with Michael Nunn and the Roy Jones fight, you know, that's where it all started from. That's when all these titles came about, because they're trying to pay that lawsuit off to Racciani, which they, if they had to pay it in full, they would have had to go bankrupt. So they made a deal with him to pay him every month. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that or not, but that's where all these African Hispanic titles and all these different things came from. And they've just got to keep doing it and doing it and doing it until they pay this bill off.
Yeah, I think if I'm now, you guys might, you know, I'm pretty sure that right now, Paulie Malignaggi is the British European welterweight champion.
No, I think he's the European, which because he's either from Italy or his ancestors are from Italy, right? So that's a perfect example.
He's the European champion.
He lives in Brooklyn.
You know, I mean, you know, but hey, but once again, man, you know, I'm just ecstatic that at least one of these organizations is trying to get away from all of these damn belts and you know, get back to the way it used to be. You know, when you had a middleweight champ, you had a bantamweight champ, you had a welterweight champ, you had a light heavyweight champ. It wasn't all, you know, but hey. Once again, I digress and go back. But, John, you know, sooner or later we had to talk about it. Kell Brook and Triple G. John, first of all, did you see this fight coming? And number two, what the hell does this do for Amir Khan?
You know, I never in a million years would have anticipated this. Like, if you asked me, name 10 guys who might fight Triple G, Kell Brook never would have even crossed my mind. It never would have came, you know, and I mean, I just can't see him not getting slaughtered, you know, and after the Amir Khan fight, like, why he would do it after seeing that. Now, granted, you know, who knows? Anything can happen in boxing. Maybe he'll put on a stellar performance and he'll box his brains out and the guy won't be able to touch him. But, man, I don't. That's why they have weight classes, and why are they allowing a guy who's not even a junior middleweight, let alone a middleweight? Why are they letting him fight for the middleweight title? And it's, you know, it's different. People say, well, Sugar Ray Leonard came back and to fight Hagler. I say, yeah, but that's a little different. I mean, I was sketchy on that one as it was, but that's Sugar Ray Leonard. This is Kell Brook. Kell Brook is not Sugar Ray Leonard. You know, why they even allow this fight? Like, I would love, you know, you see Mauricio Sulaiman, who I met, and he's really a nice guy. I hate to talk about the WBC, but it is what it is. He seemed like a really nice guy. I liked him, everything. But, you know, he always writes these stories for FightNews.com, and he gives his take on different aspects of boxing. But I don't think he's going to address this, you know, and I wish he would. I wish somebody would get him on a TV show live, so they can't think about the answer and go, why? Like, give me a good reason. Not political. You know, it's almost like they're like politicians. They give you the answer, and you're more confused after they give you the answer than you were before you asked the question. There's no reason. There's no reason that this guy should be fighting Triple G. This is there's plenty of guys at 160 he could fight. But it just shows you that, according to them, I guess, there's not enough guys at 160 that could draw money. And that's what it's about. Like, why doesn't Triple G fight the number four ranked guy by the WBC? I'll tell you why. Because whoever he is, he probably doesn't draw half the money that Kell Brook will, and that's not right. That's a problem.
Well, I think the fact that you can't name him speaks volumes, John. That doesn't it?
you want to know a crazy thing? And I've said this many times. I probably said it to you. This is how crazy boxing is. Now, I'm in boxing. I consider myself in boxing, right? Right now, back in 1984 to, say, 87, at 160, you had Tommy Hearns, Roberto Duran, Sugar Ray Leonard, James Kinchin, Milton McCroy was up there, Doug DeWitt, Don Lee, Tony Simpson, Mark Kaler, Curtis Parker, right? Now, that's like 10 guys right there in 5 seconds. I can't do that now for today. I don't know 10 middleweights. Today, this year, 2016, July 2016, I couldn't name 10 guys. I just named 10 guys from 30 years ago in the span of 5 seconds. I couldn't do that. I mean, other than Triple G and Canelo and, you know, I guess Martin Murray and I can't think of any of those. I don't know. I can't think of any others. Now, that's pretty crazy, you know. That's pretty crazy to be able to say that.
Layman, your thoughts on the making of this fight, Triple G and Kell Brook? And likewise, your thoughts on what is out there time over here, seeing as how he said he didn't want to fight Kell Brook. Who can he fight?
Well, you speak of who else Triple G can fight? Is that what you said?
No, I was speaking of your Amir Triple G Kell Brook fight, but I'm saying,
right.
Where does that put Amir Khan as far as who he can fight, you know, financially? Does Amir Khan now become irrelevant, seeing as how he doesn't want to fight his countrymen?
Man, that's a good question. You know, I think that Kell Brook, from what I heard, well, I've been hearing a lot of good stuff about him. Now, I can't say if that comes from professionals, but I've heard that he's a pretty good fighter. I haven't personally watched him fight. You know, with Triple G, like, there was an interesting article on Facebook where it said Triple G, all his opponents combined has a total of 440 losses. And that's pretty staggering when you think about all the people he fought, like to have 440 losses combined. And so now it's kind of got me saying, like, okay, look, he's looked impressive to me in terms of his power and whatnot, but I haven't seen this man in the trenches yet. I mean, maybe you have. Maybe Jerron knows something about Triple G that I don't know, but I could just tell you I have not seen enough of him. I haven't seen him get hit with a shot to make him show if he really in this because he's really in this for the love or for a paycheck, because sometimes you can fake it till you make it, and it ain't until you get into a really tough fight that we find out what you made of, you know, when you need to dig deep, you know, like Adrian Broner when he lost his first fight what did you say?
Medina.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, we got to see, but, you know, he came back great. But the point I'm making, man, is everybody's saying this about Triple G, but until I see him fight somebody that I think is a really worthy contender, you know, I can't really say how great he is. I want him to be great only because, like I told you a couple of weeks ago, James Toney don't never say nothing good about nobody. He don't say nothing good about his mama. But he said something good about Triple G. So for him to say something after knowing this man for like 20 years, it must be something that I don't see, man. You know, I know he got Abel Sanchez. Abel Sanchez is a great man. He's a very good trainer. I have a lot of respect for him. And I would just like to see if Triple G is, in fact, the next big star. You know, I mean, he does have a remnant. He has a remnant of his style that kind of reminds me of like a Julio Cesar Chavez, but, you know, it was only one Julio Cesar Chavez. Even his son can't hold up to who, you know, the fighter he was in the ring. But the way they speak about this guy, man, Triple G, it's a lot along the line of a young Julio Cesar Chavez. But Kell Brook, if he can manage to put up a good a show as everybody say, I think I might get my test, you know.
Well, you know, then I'm gonna ask you the same thing that I asked Scully then. If you think Triple G is overrated, name me five middleweights that you like to be fighting.
Well, that's the thing. Like Scully said, this day and time, you can't really name nobody, man, because it's that season, you know. It's that season where I just feel like boxing is recalibrating itself, man. You got a person like Al Heyman, as you know, I work for, who is, you know, he's doing incredible things in the sport, bringing it back to regular television. And you got a lot of emerging up-and-coming fighters that are now actually fighting each other before they have built up their records. So I don't know, man. Boxing is going to be very interesting to keep your eye on for the next 2 or 3 years to see who really pulls out among the rest of the pack, man. It's going to be very hard to say.
Yeah, I definitely have to agree with you there. You know, it's going to be interesting to see who puts their stamp on the next generation and who emerges out of the pack in the next 2 or 3 years. But Layman, hey man, so good having you back with us this Sunday. Why don't you give us your final word for the evening and tell everybody where they can find you on social media, my man.
Well, thank you, man. I appreciate it as always for letting me come on the show, man, and let me be heard. Let me just be able to just rock with you guys, man. Because as a fan of boxing, this is a fan dream come true. Let alone to be a world champion and to be respected of that. And as that, and with that being said, man, I want everybody to tune in next Sunday to the show Family Feud. Steve Harvey's going to be hosting. It's going to be a panel of boxers versus boxer. On one team, you're going to have James Toney, Chris Bird, Sugar Shane Mosley, Mikey Garcia, and his brother Robert Garcia. And then on the other opposing team, you're going to have Ray Mercer. You're going to have Victor Ortiz. You're going to have Rafael Ruiz. You're going to have Joe Goosen. And yours truly, Relentless Leonard Brewster. And, man, this show, you just ain't going to want to miss it. I can't tell you who won, but I can tell you, man, it's going to be a battle, and it'll be something you never going to forget. So I ask that you will tell your friends about it, you know, and you can come to my page, which is it's at Layman Brewster, LamonBrewster, and that's Facebook, that's Instagram. Shoot, man, that's really everything I got, Pinterest, you know. But, yeah, so with that, man, I'll just say thank you again, and I hope you guys come and support us, man. It's fighters against fighters, wits against wits, and I'll be ready to laugh, okay? Thank you.
All right, Layman. You have a great night, man. Look forward to talking to you again next week, man. And, hey, out here in Cali, I don't know, it might come on the same time that we're on, but if not, hey, man, I definitely know how to put the tape on, you know what I'm saying? I can put on the DVR, and it will record, so I'll make sure I won't miss that. I'll put it on my calendar right now. But, hey, thank you so much, man, for everything tonight, and look forward to talking to you next week.
Thank you, brother. Thank you so much.
No problem. Iceman. I guess we've kind of plugged you know what you're doing next weekend, weekend after next, but why don't you give everybody your final word and tell everybody where they can find you on social media.
Okay. It's always Iceman John Scully. We got Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. I actually have two Facebooks. John the Iceman Scully and Iceman John Scully. And I'm on there. I have some great conversations as you've seen. And, you know, just keeping focusing on my reunion. Like I said, I just got word today that Iran Barkley will be there. So that's exciting news for me. And, you know, I'm hoping that Mark Breland will be there. Actually, waiting to see what's going to happen with the Deontay Wilder fight. And that's it, though. But that's where I'm at. And I encourage anyone to look me up and talk boxing.
Most definitely, my man. And, hey, look forward to having you back. And, you know, maybe I can get out there to Las Vegas, you know, for your next amateur reunion with you and Layman. So we'll see what's going on, my man. But you have a great night, and thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Yeah. Well, Jabron, hey, man, you know, we didn't get a lot involved this evening, but, hey, you know, I'm sure the audience, you know, was more than happy to hear from, you know, the heavyweight champ and, you know, excellent trainer and memorabilist as John. So why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on social media and anything that you might have going on?
You can find me on Facebook, Jabron Clemming. I don't really have anything going on right now, but things is heating up at the Gleason's Gym. Frampton is he's been
having some workouts and sparring thing going on at the gym. The fight is coming up soon at the Barclay. So I would like the fans to definitely tune in to that, Santa Cruz and JK. If we have a little time Tuesday, we'll get more into the Triple G, Kell Brook. And you can let the fans know where they can find you.
Yeah, you can find me on the sports on King's Crib, excuse me, and you can also find me, excuse me, talking all things boxing at West Coast Steeler Fan on Twitter. Better under my account is James E. King III. But hey, we will definitely talk. I'll save some time for us to talk about the Kell Brook matchup and some of the questions that I raised with Scully and Layman. So I'll make sure I save a little time for that. So, hey, thank you as always. Thank our audience. And, hey, look forward to talking to you Tuesday on the Pugilist Corner. And don't forget to catch us next Sunday on the Weekend Wrap. Have a great night, everyone. See you next week.